When Jesus was a teenager, I wonder if Joseph ever felt the need to say to him, Jesus, I've told you a million times, stop exaggerating. If he did, it fell on deaf ears. Why do I say that? Well, let's dig down a bit into the reading. In the parable, let's call him the wicked slave, owes the king 10,000 talents. Does anybody here know how much 10,000 talents is? No? Good, then I can tell you because I looked it all up. A denarius was about a day's wage. In today's term, based on the minimum wage, that's £8.72, 7.5 hours a day, that's £65.40 a day. So that's a denarius, £65.40. There are 6,000 denarii in a talent. That's 65 times 40 equals, sorry, that's 65.4 times 6,000, which is £392,000. The debt is 10,000 talents. So rounding it up just a little, that's 4 billion quid. How many slaves, wicked or not, could possibly run up a debt of £4 billion? Jesus is exaggerating. And realizing that helps us to get our heads around a rather unsettling ending to the parable, where Jesus says that the king handed him over to be tortured until he should pay his entire debt. Now, I'm no expert, but I suspect that torturing somebody non-stop is not a very effective way of enabling them to pay a debt. And it's not. Again, Jesus is exaggerating to make the point. So what is the point? Jesus is saying that forgiveness is uncountable. There's no maximum, no 7 times, not actually 49 times, or as it is in some of the other gospels, 70 times 7, 490 times. If you're keeping track, look, pal, I've forgiven you 422 times already. Just watch it. You've only got 28 left. No, that's not forgiveness at all. It's just keeping track of somebody's transgressions. Like the title of Alan Bennett's latest book, We Should Keep On Keeping On Forgiving. Jesus later attaches a condition to us being forgiven. We have a friend called Jane. She is a retired Anglican priest and for many years was the chaplain at Newhall Women's Prison in Yorkshire. I was talking to her one day and she said, you know, in the chapel, we never, ever use the Lord's Prayer in the services. I said, why not? She said, look, many of the women in the prison find it impossible to forgive. Many of them, by far the vast majority, are there because of men. Men who controlled them, beat them up regularly, raped them, used them as prostitutes or drug mules. Men who controlled and totally destroyed their lives. In the Lord's Prayer, Jesus taught us to pray, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. So where does that leave us? Well, God's love is unconditional. Perhaps for some of us, like those women, all that we can say for now is, Lord, I want to forgive. Or even, Lord, I want to forgive. And surely that must be enough for our God of love. So, back to the parable. Hang on a minute. Who are you? What are you doing here on the stage?
Slave. the Bible passage you just read. I'm pure evil. See me swirl my cloak and twirl my moustache.
Yeah, okay. I'm not quite sure you got the idea, but just be quiet for now, will you? Okay, now.
Oh,
hang on, who are you?
I am the king in this story. Note my regal bearing. Note my crown and my cloak, trimmed with ermine.
And the broom?
Don't mention that yet. It's part of the plot.
Okay. Right, so, sorry, turning to you again, wicked slave, exactly why are you here?
I'm on my way to beat up the miserable worm who owes me money. Then I will sling him into prison. But what is his majesty doing down here in this filthy, rat-infested alley? I'll ask him. Your majesty, what are you doing down here in this filthy, rat-infested alley?
Look, pal, use your brain a bit. I forgave you a rather generous debt, didn't I?
Yes, O king.
So that has probably left me rather out of pocket, wouldn't you say?
Yes, O king.
So I have to make up the money somehow. When I forgave you, the money you owed me didn't magically hop back into my bank account now, did it?
No, O king.
So I have to make up the money somehow, don't I?
Yes, O king.
So I'm sweeping the streets and contributing feedback in my spare time, earning a bit of cash to make ends meet. Don't you see?
Yes, O king. Well, actually, no, O king. Look, who wrote this stuff? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I did, actually. What's your problemo?
I mean, it's crazy. You've already told us that I owe him 4 billion quid. How's he going to make that up by sweeping the streets? He'd be at it for 1 million years.
Calm down, calm down. Can't you see, you dummy? This is what nowadays we in the acting profession call theatre of the absurd. You see, Jesus here is just making a point by using exaggeration. Who ever heard of a slave owing his master £4 billion? And you may not know this yet because, well, we haven't got to that part of the story, but when you beat up the guy who owes you a tiddly amount, your mates tell me, and I sling you in prison and torture you until you repay the entire debt. How are you going to pay back 10 quid, let alone £4 billion, if you're hanging on a prison wall in shackles? All Richard has done is add another hyperbolic scene to the story to emphasize the point that when you forgive someone, you are basically saying, I'll pay. It's Beckett, it's Ian Eskew, N.F. Simpson, Spike Milligan, total absurdity. Richard here is merely playing the same absurdist game. Pure genius.
Hang on a minute. Richard, did you write what he just said as well?
Well, I might have done.
Pure genius. Well, Mr. Genius, how do you propose to end this little sketch, eh? Tell me that.
Look, just get off the platform.
Come on, let's go. Well, I've got to hand it to him. I didn't think he'd end it like this. Pure genius.
So, what about the idea of the king sweeping the streets to pay off the debt? I can call it a genius idea because it's not mine. It was actually, I heard it from David Watson, an amazing Anglican preacher and evangelist, told the story many years ago. And it had a deep effect on me because I'd always thought that when I said, I forgive you to anyone who'd wronged me, what I was sort of saying was, oh, it's okay, it doesn't matter. But what this story taught me was that I actually meant, it's okay, I do forgive you, it does matter, but I will pay. That's the key message of the parable. For the king to have to forgive a slave 4 billion is ridiculous. But the parable is there to make us think about things at what we might call a higher level. What if the king in the parable is our creator God, the King of Kings, and the debt is, well, the debt is what? Many years ago, I visited the home of the Cansdale family. The older ones amongst you might remember George, very old actually, a few of us might remember on TV, a character called George Cansdale, who used to bring mongooses and things like that into the studio. He was a member of the family. And in Victorian times, this family was a very prominent, rich, evangelical family, very prominent in those circles. I was there as an away day, for an away day, as a member of All Souls Langham Place, the church there. I was on the council. The family allowed us to look round the principal rooms of this rather marvellous Victorian mansion. And I was particularly taken by the dinner service that was on shelves in the dining room. The middle of all the plates and the bowls had what you might call an improving Bible verse written on them. I remember thinking at the time that it must have been rather alarming if you were a dinner guest there in those days. You're calmly slurping your mock turtle soup, when as the level of the liquid goes down, it reveals on the bottom of the dish the words, "The wages of sin is death." You panic. What on earth have they fed me? After calming down a bit, the Victorian dinner guest may have thought, "Why isn't it the wages of sin are death?" Which I think is a very good question. But perhaps a better question, a more relevant, might be, why? Why do the wages of sin have to be death? I suppose it depends on what death means. Death in this sense is what? Not physical death, no. No, death is separation from God and from all those qualities that are of God: love, generosity, peace, justice, compassion. Death is anything that is not of God, that is not godly: selfishness, greed, injustice, hatred, jealousy. Those things can be no more of God than a rotting carcass can be a corpse in a royal banquet. We ask God to forgive us. In our minds, it's easy. It's okay. It doesn't matter. That's what God will say. He's just an old man in the sky. No, it does matter. It can't be ignored. It can't be just brushed under some celestial carpet. It's real. Here is how God deals with it. This is from the first letter of Peter, chapter 2, verse 24. He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that free from sins, we might live for righteousness. By his wounds, you have been healed. It's a kind of divine transaction of total love within the Trinity. John, in his gospel, as you know, put it like this: God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And that is why, as the parable says, when the King of Love forgives our debts, he is saying, "I'll pay." That's the meaning of the parable. And so is that what happened on the cross? Well, I'm not sure. A parable is a story that helps us to understand something more about God, but it can only go so far. And I would say the same about the meaning of the cross. We have so many ideas and teachings from St. Paul, from St. Augustine, from St. Thomas Aquinas, Martin Luther, John Wesley. Their teachings are pictures that may contain or help us to appreciate the truth more. But they can't really explain Good Friday and Easter Sunday. That is a divine secret still to be revealed. I'm not sure if you agree with me. Charles Wesley agrees with me. I know that because he asked this question in one of his famous hymns: "How can it be that thou, my God, should die for me? And then he answers the question, 'Tis mystery all, the immortal dies, who can explore his strange design? It's a mystery yet to be revealed. Only when, as Charles Wesley also said, boldly I approach the eternal throne, and there's another picture, will I really understand how, Wesley again, my God could die for me. Finally, let's think a bit more about our forgiving of others. It may be that someone has betrayed a secret about me, or maligned my reputation, or even deliberately physically or psychologically wounded me. It may be hard for me to forgive them. But here's the rub. Forgive or not, I'll pay anyway, one way or another. Because if I don't forgive, I will continue to carry a resentment. And that resentment will eat me up with bitterness and anger and destroy my peace. If I can forgive, I'll be free of that burden. And knowing that we are forgiven and being forgiven ourselves is joy, liberty, and a blessing, as we will now experience.